Thank you once again for coming to hear me talk. I'm known at work as an architect who's good at establishing rapport with a business and communicating with them. What I want to talk to you about today is the application of soft skills to the domain of architecture. Skills like communication, selling, empathy. I'm going to do that by telling you a story, by talking about three fundamental questions that I think we should all ask ourselves as architects, and then by drilling down into a few more detailed questions around those three main themes. I'm expecting to rant at you for a while, and then at the end, there should be plenty of time for questions. So if you've got any questions, just wait until the end, and we can have hopefully a good discussion about what I've maybe challenging you with, or maybe just telling you what you already know. So I'd like you to imagine a conversation. You've been working on a solution architecture document for a few months, and you present it to a business stakeholder. You show them your detailed models, you show them the frameworks you're using, you talk about where you're going to deploy servers. And they stop you and they say, "So what? So what? This doesn't impress me. The architecture doesn't impress me. Your models don't impress me. Your frameworks don't impress me. How does this help me do what I need to do? What have I spent all my money on? What have you spent all my money on?" If you haven't had that conversation, that kind of conversation, and I've had it from both sides, from the person asking that question and having been that question asked of me. If you haven't had that conversation, you don't think you've had that conversation, I think you're wrong. Your business stakeholders, if they're not blunt enough to say it to your face, they're thinking it. And they're saying it to their colleagues. So I'd like you to imagine a different conversation. A conversation where you say to your business stakeholder, "Here are your problems. These are what I understand your problems are. And here's my answers to your problems. And here's how the technology I'm going to deploy, and here's how it delivers those answers." If you can have that conversation, I guarantee you they won't say what. They won't say, "I don't understand why you did this." If you think that's hypothetical, I'd like to tell you a story from my own personal experience. I was called in to help a project that was in a lot of trouble. The business had lost all confidence in the architect working on the project, and they'd lost all confidence in IT. The project was stalled, and they said, "Look, enough's enough. We want to change." I went and had a talk to the architect working on the project and said, "Look, what's going on?" And he said, "The business don't know what they want. They can't tell me what it is that they need. And we've sat and I've been doing all this thinking about what they should do, and here's how we think we should deploy this stuff, but we're not making much progress." I went and talked to the business owner, and I said, how can I help? And they said, "Look, it's stalled. We want some momentum. We want something going forward." And I asked them a few more questions, and it became obvious to me that they did know what they wanted. It was fairly simple, really. What they wanted was a new product launched, faster product development. They wanted to be able to create new products quickly, and they wanted to onboard new customers quickly and easily. What they didn't know and what they couldn't articulate is what they wanted the technology to do. But I said to them, "Well, it's not a problem, that's my job." I went away, did a little bit of thinking, and I came up with a simple architecture that I could explain to them and said, "Here's the problems, here's my solutions, and here's how this expensive technology that we're going to spend all this time and money on setting up, how is this how it's going to deliver the outcomes you're after?" They said, "Great, that's exactly what we want." And they said, Now, can you come and present that to our stakeholders on the business side so we can get buy-in for this project? So the conversation had changed radically from one where they were upset, angry, hurt, and felt all money was being wasted, to one where they were happy to engage with architects and architecture. So there's a number of lessons that I learned from that story, and some of those are the ones I want to pass on today. So my key message for you today is that architecture must add value, and it must be seen to add value. Why must architecture add value? Well, that's sort of a silly question. If you don't think you're adding value, then if you're in my organisation, ask you to leave. But the question about why is going to be seen to add value is a bit different. The point is that architecture is a bit hard to understand for people outside the technical realm. What we do seems a bit esoteric, it seems incomprehensible to some people. Especially business people, they struggle to understand how what we do is related to the tangible outcome and a working IT system that they want. So because they don't see that, we have to show them. So I want you to think about three questions. What is valuable? How do you add value? And how do you show you're adding value? If you think about these three questions, I believe you'll be more successful as an architect. I believe this has helped me be more successful as an architect. If you think about these questions, if you can answer these three questions, your stakeholders will be able to understand how it is that you are helping them do the things that they care about, rather than doing some strange IT thing that they don't understand. Asking these questions will help you add more value. What I also think we need to do is not just ask these questions once at the beginning of a project or once when I start a job, but ask them constantly. Because things change, we learn, we grow, the business changes and projects change. But keep asking these questions so we know where we're going. A lot of what I'm talking about today is just the application of common sense to architecture. That the issue is that when technical complexity raises its ugly head, common sense often vanishes. But that's exactly when we need to apply it the most. So before I go on and talk about these questions in a bit more detail, I just want to set the scene by giving you my perspective on what architecture is. So I think that architecture is about solving business problems with technology. The difference between architecture and engineering, or the deeper, more technical roles, is that those are about solving technical problems. In order to do that, the architect's got to act as a translator. They need to understand what the business wants, what they're asking for, what they mean. And they also need to understand what technical people want, what they're asking for, and what they need, and translate between the two. The architect also needs to juggle multiple domains, where most technical roles are only juggling one. So, for instance, when we're working as a solution architects, we're usually worried about infrastructure, applications, networks, security, identity. But usually a technical person is only looking at one of those domains. I've had a number of discussions with real architects, not fake IT ones, when they talk about building houses and buildings. And they're facing a lot of very similar concerns. So in a recent discussion with a real architect, he says to me, I'm designing a home, the architect's not building it. If we left that design up to a structural engineer, every single home would resemble a bunker or a bomb shelter. And if I left it up to a services engineer, there'd be sewerage pipes in the main hallway. what the architect is doing is balancing the concerns of the structural engineers and the services engineers and tying those in together with the needs of the people who want that home or that building and what they want to do with it, what they want to get out of it. And that's just what we do. So I see architecture as being a combination of both technical skills and communication skills, soft skills. That's part of what differentiates the role for me. Too many architectures that I see are just a list of technologies. And it doesn't work for me. It doesn't help me do my role. And to give you an idea of what I mean here, if I want to evaluate that architecture, I need to understand what problems it's trying to solve. And in order to do that, I need to know the motivation behind that architecture. I need to know, you know, is it going to be successful at doing that thing as opposed to some other thing? And in order to do that, I need to understand what the technologies are doing. So what's their function, what their purpose, how do they connect to that motivation? Specifically, you want to be able to answer the question, what's that thing there in the list? What's that doing? So what's that product for? How does that help me as a business owner solve that problem? And, if you like, more importantly, can we do without it? Because it's expensive. Right? I want to get rid of that thing. It's, oh, you know, that's $3 million. I don't have that much money. Can we get rid of that? If you don't know what it's for and how it contributes to the motivation that we have, you can't answer those questions. And you run the risk of losing one of the most important pieces of kit or technology. It's also, in my mind, about business process and people. If you're delivering an architecture that has a massive impact on the business processes and people of an organization, you're... There's a large change effort that the business needs to undertake. If they're not prepared for that, if they don't understand that that's what they're getting, you're going to have a massive failure, no matter how good technically your solution is. So you need to take into account the business process, the people impacts. You can't ignore the human factors when we're doing architecture. So for me, architecture doesn't equal technology. Architecture equals motivation, purpose, business process, people, and technology. It's about all of them working together to deliver an answer, a solution, and solve a problem. Some of you might have heard of NovaPay, and if you've read the NovaPay report, you'll see that some of the problems they encountered were because they did exactly that. They ignored a lot of the human factors. One of the key things that NovaPay did is it changed the business process by pushing out data entry from a central data processing service out to schools, to school administrators and school staff. The amount of business process change appears to have been fundamentally misunderstood and underestimated. In addition, it appears that that data entry in the center performed an important quality control function. So if someone, if a school administrator sends in a form saying, pay this person $10,000 for the last week's work, the data entry people at the centre said, well, this is probably a mistake. And they'd check, they'd ring them up and get it changed. Unfortunately, when we made the school administrators enter the data directly, no one was checking. So that lack of attention to the human factors was a non-trivial contribution to the failure of NovaPay. And this is just a quote about real architecture, but I think it underlines the thing. It's not just about the physical materials. It's not just about, in our case, technology. So I want to return to the first question, my first theme. What's valuable? And how do you get this information? Well, the first place to get that information is from listening to your customer. for many of us, if we're working in internal businesses, our customer is going to be our business, our internal business users, our business units. So we need to have a conversation with them to understand them and what they want and what they need. So we need to listen to them. There's often a temptation when you're working in a technical role to stick to the technical stuff, to look at the technical facts and figures and understand the technology and avoid the fluffy conversations with people who you don't talk naturally with. You need to resist that temptation and actually go out, have the conversation. You need to genuinely want to listen to them and hear what they have to say. You need to ask them business questions rather than technical ones. It's sort of obvious, but we often miss that. The other thing that we need to do is we need to avoid being arrogant. I've seen this quite a bit. We think that because we understand this horrendously complicated stuff, the IT world, that we're terribly smart. And we think that because they don't understand that technical stuff, they're not very smart. In the worst cases, this leads to people in IT thinking that they know the business better than the business does, and that they are better at solving the business problems than the business are. That arrogance is both tremendously off-putting and is very obvious to see. So don't be arrogant. They've probably thought about this stuff harder than you have, almost certainly. And they have already thought these things through and they do have the answers. Maybe they're not able to tell you in the language you're expecting. The other thing that I've found when listening to the business is it pays not to be defensive. So a lot of them will bash you about IT if you're the first person to come up and ask them. You know, nothing you guys ever does works, it's all dreadful, it's expensive, it's hard. And if you get defensive about this, you've lost the game and you might as well give up and go home. You can empathise, it probably pays not to agree, mostly. So yes, we are a bunch of idiots and don't trust us. But empathise and prove to them you're not like the rest or you're not like that previous experience. You're going to gain two things if you do this. You're going to gain the information you need to make a successful architecture, and you're also probably going to be the first IT person they've ever seen who actually genuinely listens to them. And that helps you gain trust and confidence, which is all about how you're going to gain success delivering to their needs. Again, in terms of understanding what's valuable, do you know their world? Do you understand the world that your business people live in? Do you understand what motivates them? Do you understand what they worry about? Do you understand how they're measured? How's their performance measured? What are their KPIs? Are they measured on revenue? Are they measured on cost containment? Are they measured on compliance? What they're measured on, what they worry about, will strongly influence the things that you need to fix, the things that you need to solve, the ways you need to help, what your architecture needs to pay attention to. So, to give you an example of what I mean here, when I first started at my faceless bureaucracy, Department of Internal Affairs, I started talking with people who run passports, the people who run births, deaths, marriages, and citizenship. And they had a set of issues around. They needed to share information, but it was hard. So after those sort of first couple of conversations, I sat away, and I thought to myself, well, what they need is master data management. You know, it's a pattern I've seen in other places, I know it works, solves these sorts of problems. And I'm lucky I just thought it to myself and didn't say it. Because it turns out that a much bigger issue for those people is not the efficiency of that particular set of business processes, it's the privacy and confidentiality of the information that they are guardians of. Master data management would not only be a bad architecture, it would be illegal. So, luckily I didn't say that, but I needed to actually fully understand what really motivated them to get to a place where we can talk about a successful architecture, one that met their needs. understanding those things drives your architecture. And if we think about, for instance, the difference between two of the industries I know, government and telcos, they've got really different drivers, really different things people are measured on. And that's going to influence the way you approach projects. So government is not interested in revenue. What it's mostly interested in is risk. It's also interested in cost and service delivery. Telecommunications, on the other hand, is mostly interested in profit, not cost per se. It's also interested in compliance and customer experience. So when you come up and you're evaluating options, for instance, you have a problem in a project and you've got to make a choice. If you've got a choice between, for instance, decreasing security and improving the customer experience, you're probably going to get very different answers if you're in government than if you're working in a telco. Well, similarly, if I've got an option on the table that will drive up costs but increase revenue, well, government's just not going to be interested. But a telco, on the other hand, will be. So we need to understand the world that people live in and what they're measured on to actually think about, deliver good architectures. The other thing, the other question I talk about, how do we add value? And the question I ask myself, and that I suggest you ask yourselves, is why do something rather than nothing? Why do anything at all? So we often justify which actions we're going to take within a project, which options we're going to go with. We do a whole heap of analysis on that. But sometimes we don't ask that big question, why are we doing anything at all? Why are we bothering with this project? And surely that's a more important question, because projects cost a lot of money and time and effort, and if they're a waste of time, we could be spending that on something more useful. So for all my projects, I ask myself this question, and I make sure I've got a good answer. If I don't have a good answer, I try and get the project stopped. And that's actually a better outcome than letting it go. And I have actually had done this recently in DIA. It was a project that had been going for a while. I got involved and I said, well, what's the business benefit of this? You know, it helps us do this sort of stuff. So, well, really? How much? Digging into it a bit more, we actually figured out that the cost, it was probably going to be $2 million to deliver the project, but would actually probably only save tens of thousands of dollars. On the face of it, it looked okay, but on a little bit of digging a bit deeper, it didn't stack up. So the answer to the question in that case was actually this: it's better to do nothing than this at all. So we stopped the project and saved money. Beyond this, I think it's a question you should ask of yourself and all the things that you do every day, so the key activities that you undertake. Is this thing that I'm doing worth doing at all? It's especially important when we're talking about things like architecture documents, architecture activities, which, in my experience, quite often we're doing them because the process says so, or somebody once thought it was a good idea. So there's a small proportion of those things, and they take a lot of effort and time, that probably we should be better off not doing at all. So ask this question about that architecture document, that deliverable being produced, and if the answer is actually it's better not to do it, just stop. Go somewhere else. Do something else. Spend that time and effort on something more valuable. So the next question I have for you is, are you a fox or a hedgehog? The labels come from a famous essay by the philosopher Isaiah Berlin. And for him, a fox and a hedgehog were fundamentally different ways of thinking about stuff, potentially fundamentally different kinds of people. So the fox knows many things, but the hedgehog knows one big thing. The hedgehog has one central theory or ideology or idea that it relates everything to. And the fox knows lots of things. They don't just have a one dominant theory. what some people recently have done is look at use this idea to think about expertise. And what they've found is quite interesting, that there are sort of two different cognitive models, fox and the hedgehog. The fox looks at all of the evidence, changes their theory based on the evidence, uses the appropriate theory based on the circumstance and the situation. The hedgehog, on the other hand, discounts evidence if it doesn't fit their central theory. They try and apply their theory or their ideology or their idea to everything. What they determined was that actually experts who were foxes made better predictions. They were better experts. And experts who were hedgehogs were worse. And for those same reasons, I think foxes make better architects. So we've all met, I'm sure, hedgehog architects, someone who loves a particular methodology, a particular framework, a particular product, and they think that's the answer to everything. So whatever your problem is, SharePoint's the answer. Whatever your problem is, the Zachman framework's the answer. John Zachman is the archetypal architectural hedgehog, right? His answer is, my framework is the true reality of all organizations, and if you use my framework on your organization, you'll be able to solve all your problems. Now, I'm not convinced by that. So foxes change their architectures based on what's going on around them, based on the situation your organization has, based on what the evidence is. So I want you to think about being a fox. If your architecture isn't working, change it. If your ideas aren't working, change them. If this framework doesn't work for your organization, change it. And I think if you do that, you're much more likely to be successful than if you try and apply a cookie-cutter approach to every single problem you face. In my experience, in every project and every piece of work I do, there's always more things to do than there is time. So, are you focusing on the right things? Are you focusing on what's important? If you've asked the questions that I've been asking before, you'll hopefully have an idea about what is important, what matters to an organization, what matters to the business. So you've got some way of prioritizing those activities. What you want to do is focus on those things that are most important to solving the business's objectives. If you forget something inessential, no one's going to care at the end of the day. But if you forget that thing that delivers all the value, they will. It's easy to get distracted on projects. It's easy to get distracted with things that are technically interesting, or to get distracted by the loudest voice, the person who's the most insistent. So instead, remind yourself of what's important. What of those things in your project are going to deliver the outcomes the business are interested in? We've probably all been in projects where you've had a fight with the project manager about de-scoping things. I've seen projects that have been that they have de-scoped everything that delivered any business value. They still delivered on time and in budget and claimed a success. You want to avoid that, because the only person who thinks that's a success is the project manager, whose bonus depends on doing things on time and in budget. If you're the architect on that kind of project, next time you go knocking on the business's door to ask for some help or some information, they'll tell you to get lost. I want to think about whether what we deliver value by obeying all the rules in your organisation. I don't believe that's the best way to give the business what they want. I don't believe that we should obey rules mindlessly. I like to think that I'm at least as bright as the person who wrote the rule. And I'm paid well enough to not just follow them blindly, but actually to check whether or not they're the right thing to do. You know, often we have, for instance, solution delivery lifecycle processes that tell us what architecture documents we have to do and the process we have to follow to deliver solutions. And they work most of the time, but sometimes they don't. I believe I understand the spirit of that rule well enough to know when breaking the letter is actually the most important thing. I could bend it, I might might try and go around it. And occasionally, I'll say, okay, this just doesn't work. It's an obstruction to getting what we need to get done. So most cases, what I will try and do is find out who's the custodian, the guardian of the rule, and get their agreement. If I can make a good enough case, if I can convince myself, I should be able to convince them that it's not worth doing. And in my experience, that works quite well. What doesn't work is everyone saying, no, you can't do that because that's the rules. Have you got runs on the board? You don't want to think about solving small problems to get the conversation started, solving small problems for the business so that they trust you. You don't turn up in an organization and immediately have the right to their trust. You don't walk in and say, I'm the architect, let me make all your decisions for you. That's fine, just trust me, I know what I'm doing. No one's going to fall for that. And yet I see people wandering all the time and say, I'm in charge, I know what I'm doing. And it doesn't work out very well. So you need to earn that trust. And my suggestion is if you want to earn that trust quickly, you've got a project, for instance, that's in trouble. You find something really small, but it's easy to fix and sort and solve that, and then come back and say, look, I'll fix this problem for you. You'll build up the trust that you need to do the big things. Related to that, you need to hold, as I've sort of talked about before, you need to hold conversations with the business. You need to get information out of them. Often they'll be going, again, who are you? Why would I want to waste my time on that conversation? If you can find something that they want to have a conversation about, something that matters to them, choose that as your topic of conversation, because they will want to do that. And then either slip in at the end that thing that you really want to talk about, but they might not. Or use that initial conversation that they cared about as a way to start another series of conversations. So if you can do this, start small and build up trust. You'll get their cooperation more easily than if you rush in and say, I won't. Let's talk about now what we should do on your $10 million project from someone I've never heard of. Do you speak their language? So how do we show someone that we're adding value if they can't understand what we're saying? We have to do it by communicating with them in their language. So I often hear comments from IT like, business cannot tell us what they want. They can't say what we need to do. Conversely, I've talked to a lot of business people and they say, IT come and talk to us and we don't understand a word they're saying. We tell them what we want in plain English and they don't understand us and they give us something different. I've had the pleasure of having a conversation with an operational manager when they talk about an IT project that was run by my IT department, where they said, we went to IT and we said we wanted to do something. And they said, tell us your requirements. So we told IT what our requirements were and they said, those aren't requirements. We don't understand what you want. So they sent a BA over to us. They asked us a whole heap of questions. They wrote down a whole heap of things that they called requirements. Then later on the project failed to deliver successfully. And IT turned around and said, but you gave us these rubbish requirements. She said to me, these weren't my requirements, I didn't write them. How am I getting blamed for them? So what we need to do is learn to speak their language. Learn to understand what it is that they are saying. Understand their terminology, understand the tools that businesses use to communicate with each other. I don't believe it's their job to learn our specialised language, it's our job to learn their general language about our organisation, so that we can speak to them meaningfully. I'd suggest using tools to gain information out of them, tools that they're familiar with. So SWOT analyses, PESTEL analyses, balance scorecards, strategy maps, tools that the business regularly use to communicate the sorts of things we're interested in, instead of IT specialised tools like, you know, functional and non-functional requirements that they don't get. So, as an example of what I mean here, if you go and talk to your average business line of business manager and say, you've got your application is running an unsupported operating system, I'll say, so what? What does that mean? I don't care. If, however, you say you have got a risk of criminals accessing your data, they will care. They won't say, so what? So don't talk to them about technical things. Talk to them about business things, things that they understand and care about, using their language. And this has got nothing to do with my point, but I just like it. So returning to the question of how do we show that we're adding value. Remember, as I said earlier, that what we do as architects is hard to understand for business people. They don't get what we're doing. It's strange. It's incomprehensible. So we need to move the conversation from what we do to the value that we add, so that they can understand why what we're doing is worthwhile. So don't talk about the fact that you create solution architecture documents, that you model technologies, that you worry about deployment of servers into security zones or whatever. Talk about how you make their projects more likely to succeed, how you meet their needs. So you should be able to describe your value proposition. You should be able to describe how you help them do the things that they care about, not how you spend your day. If you do that, you're again more likely to get buy-in for doing those things, for spending the money on the architecture, instead of skipping that bit. Once you've done, you've created a value proposition, you understand what your value proposition is, turn it into an elevator pitch. An elevator pitch is a short sales pitch that you could make to an executive if you bumped into the elevator and while it's traveling between the 8th floor and ground. It's a sales pitch that sort of says shortly why they should support you in doing the thing you want to do. So it's a 30-second summary of the most important stuff and why it matters to them. My suggestion is you have pre-canned elevator pitches for your projects, for your team and your function, and for you in particular. And that way, if you bump into the chief executive and they say, oh, what are you doing, what are you working on, or you've got something you want them to support, you'll have it there ready. More likely, though, if you bump into your business sponsor in the hallway at a social event and they say, what do? You won't be giving them an incomprehensible answer about architecture. You can instead say, well, I help you make your projects succeed by doing this, that, and the other thing. And again, when you come calling next time to ask them for help, when you come calling next time to ask them for information, I'll go, oh, I know what they do. I've lost track of the number of times I've been asked, what exactly is an enterprise architect? And more recently, having these sort of conversations at work, because there's a general perception that people don't understand what enterprise architecture is, or what architecture in general is. So we're engaged in an interesting exercise, and I sort of suggest it to you, of as a team coming up with an elevator pitch. And the whole exercise itself is interesting because what it's going to do, what it was doing for us and what it will do for you, is focus on what's absolutely essential. And so you understand what's inessential. And if you do it as a team, I think you'll get some surprises about what other people think is important and what you think is important. And again, There's nothing that focuses the mind like trying to get something complex and technical and explain it in 30 seconds. So an elevator pitch is a kind of selling. And then the question I want to ask you is what are you selling? We often think that selling is a dirty word. Certainly, I don't know if you can see it there, but the look on that man's face is pretty much similar to what I get out of my team when I talk to them about selling. But it isn't a dirty word. It's not, selling is not lying, it's not being dishonest. It's not about cheating, and it's not about emotional blackmail. What it is, it's the thing that we do, all of us do every day when we want someone to do something and we don't have the power to force them to do it. It's convincing them. So in architecture, we're doing this all the time. When we're trying to get people to approve things, when we're trying to get people to commit money and resources to do things, when we're trying to get them to agree with us about a course of action. So what I think we need to do as architects is move from selling unconsciously and badly to selling consciously and well. And a couple of suggestions, just basic ones that I have. Every architect should read a sales book, preferably a good one. But read a sales book and understand some of the key techniques around selling so that you can use them to get the kind of agreement you need to move forward. The kinds of things I'm talking about here are, think about a lot of this processes as influencing people. Think about these things as, what levers do I push to get this person to agree with me? Understand the motivators for the individuals that you need approval from. Understand what their needs are, and then convince them that what you're after meets those needs. That's what selling's all about. So, as an example of this, or rather as an example of not doing this, recently myself and the team were involved in a situation where we put something up for approval and we hadn't done this. And it got knocked back. Straight away. All the stakeholders said, oh, hang on, nah. Now luckily, we regrouped, went off and did some of that groundwork and selling and took it back and got approved the next week. So there's no big deal. But it was a salutary lesson in some of the things that I'm talking about here that we'd forgotten, that we hadn't had time to practice. If we'd gone around and talked to all of those people individually and understood what they were worried about, when it came to the actual meeting to approve it, it would have been home and host. So that's just a simple example, but it's the sort of thing that I'm talking about, that we should be doing this every day. And if you're not doing it, you will be selling yourself short. So the message I want to leave you with today is that you should make your architecture add value and be seen to add value. That if you use the questions I'm talking about to understand what it is that you do, why you do it, you'll be able to add more value. And then if you wrap the softer skills that I've been talking about, communication, sales, marketing, empathy, if you wrap those around your solid core of technical skills, then you'll become a more successful architect. I've found that doing that has made my life easier and allowed me to deliver more successful projects, more successful architectures. If you do that, I believe you'll become a more valuable and a more valued member of your organisation. Thank you.